hardly know where to begin with this one. The official story is that Bob Neverett has consulted with intelligence agencies and corporations around the world on the ramifications of new means of communication for old forms of expression, such as warfare, education, medicine, entertainment, and politics. The other half of the story is that he's experienced parallel worlds, rarely requires sleep, and has not aged for the last four decades. He is an enigma in virtually every sense of the word, and to add to the fascination, he's been involved with a non-physical source of intelligence that is equally confounding, named Ion. Together, you can listen to hundreds of hours of archived information as they discuss the nature of reality to parallel worlds and everything in between. This conversation with Bob, however, is about a new substance that he says promises to change the human experience. It is said to be capable of taking us to the next level of our evolution quickly. Hold on to your seat. Here's Bob. By the way, Bob is also known as Bob Dobbs. Bob, I can't tell you how excited I am to talk to you. I mean, you probably hear bubbles, champagne bubbles coming out of my voice because I've been studying up on you a little bit, and you're an anomaly in every single way. I've never come across such an incredibly eclectic, powerful from the inside kind of life as to what you've led. I mean, it's almost a cross between Stranger at the Pentagon and Forrest Gump. You've been everywhere at exactly the right moment, starting with your youth during World War II and after, when you were still relatively young, and we'll get into that in a moment. Bob, can you just give us a little bit of background on yourself? Just we'll hop through it quickly and get into this whole thing about why you look like you do.
I like your reference to Forrest Gump. I was on LA radio, KPFK in 93, 94, David Porter show, Genesis of a Music. And when that movie came out in 94, people who had heard me in LA said, "This movie is based on you, Bob."
Well, that's validating.
Yeah, and it was possible because I was on KPFK, which a lot of people in Hollywood listen to. And I've been talking about my life and situation for about a year. So, yeah, Forrest Gump, that fits. And basically, though, I was born in Paris of a family of butlers going back 300, 400 years. You can actually read a story by Charles Dickens in his collection of journalistic articles called The Toady Tree, where he talks about all these different people ending names ending in OBBS, like Mobs, Sobs, Cobbs. But the one named Dobbs actually refers to my great-great-grandfather, and he was a very interesting character that Dickens wrote about. So that's the antecedent. And it's basically about this Dobbs character. He always seemed to know what was going on 6 weeks before what happened. And he was often seen, Dickens would see him around the Westminster political buildings. And Dobbs was a toady tree because he'd be a toady because he would talk to somebody. And as soon as the minister came in, Dobbs guy would run off and start talking to the minister because he had important information to pass on from the oligarchs he represented, his own employer. So that is my background. But we were not involved in intelligence. I wasn't brought in till the 40s. But before that, my father was brought in the 20s because the oligarchs were very weakened after World War One. Remember, the Austro-Hungarian Empire was there in 1914 and gone in 1918, and the interconnections of those oligarchic families across Europe was really hurt. So the intelligence networks, the oligarchs that my employers had, were weakened, so they had to sort of go in-house. That's how it started, and then you can read that in my diaries.
Yes, and I highly encourage people to read your diaries. And your family remained very well positioned, as I remember hearing in one of the interview clips. Your father was a member of the English pronunciation Priory of Sion, which was popularized by the Da Vinci Code book, Dan Brown, and the movies and such. And so your family remained plugged into very high levels of not just society, government, and finance, all the way up through and including your life going into the world of intelligence. So you've had access to information that is most of us can't even fathom.
That's right. Now, it's not my family, it's my employers.
Your employers.
My family, my father was brought into it, and he started being allowed into the meetings of his boss with the boss's own secret society. And yes, the Priory Scion is one name for it. It's actually not the actual name of these people. They never had a name because they were sort of secret all the time. They allow people to think there's phrases like Illuminati or Priory Scion, but they're not they don't have a name. You know what I mean? It's oral. It's a small one-to-one kind of stuff. But what people think of as the Priory Scion is exactly what my parents were involved with, and then I was brought into it in World War II. I worked with Reinhard Gehlen after 1945 in the Project Paperclip Network. And I was not a leader of that. I was a gopher, an early level of talking to people and being told to do this and that, and you can read that in my diaries. It's only later. I actually become the head of the whole thing in the late 80s. I was quite the most powerful person on the planet on those levels. But I'm a student of Marshall McLuhan. I was his archivist. And McLuhan shows that technology, starting in the radio era, obsolesced the old bureaucratic controls. For example, money itself was no longer a private property in the 30s. Once you had the welfare states, money became public property. And that's what people don't understand when they look into the banksters or the Illuminati. They don't understand the role of the elites now. Basically, the elites just manage the interpretation of the big patterns, like a Henry Kissinger, so to speak.
And when you look at that, of course, there are many, many sites that deal with conspiracy theories on this. I don't even like the word conspiracy, but try to take it apart. And one of the things I've always wondered, and I think many people wonder, is when you look at these inside organizations, you just mentioned a moment ago that this is very much one-on-one. Are we looking at a highly orchestrated global effort of manipulation, whether it's markets or monies or resources? Are we looking at really much more localized and private types of operations that are going on, one maybe not aware at all of the other?
Yes, the McLuhan points out that when the telegraph, but especially radio, automobiles, jet planes, telephones came in the teens and 20s, the whole bureaucratic structure that what we call the Illuminati through the oligarchy could run society, the industrial print-based society in the 19th century, could not be done when you can have local groups spring up and be local mafias. And there's a new television series called Boardwalk Empire, Empire Boardwalk, which really shows this process in 1921, 22. Very interesting, based around Atlantic City. It's actually pretty accurate that the technologies did not allow the old Illuminati to run the show as they had in the 19th century. So they sat on the sidelines, and basically our group, the group my father was working for, were people sitting on the sidelines who were trillionaires, quadrillionaires. And there are only about 30 or 40 quadrillionaires in the world, but they have so much money, more money than in, so to speak, they can't be involved with the national economies. But if push comes to shove, they've got a lot of resources to move things their way. But basically, they monitored the developments in technology, because they knew the medium was the message. They knew technologies upset everything. So they always kept a track of the latest developments and had their tentacles in monitoring technologies, weren't necessarily creating them. And I was actually, as a young man, in Albert Hofmann's lab in April 1943 when he reconnected with the LSD he had sitting on the shelf since 1938. We did not know that he was going to have that experience that week, but it turned out in his diaries that he did. But that's an example of going out and meeting people to see what the latest technologies were, because that's what we were concerned about, or my employers were.
Well, and it seems like it gets even more esoteric and strange than that, because if we start looking really deeply into some of what's been going on, then you're looking at people who have been able to move beyond time and space to access information and bring technologies forward and such as well, haven't we?
Yes, I the only time I went into the quote fringe area was in August 17th, 1999. I spoke at Bob Brown's UFO Congress, International Congress. You ever heard of that?
Oh yeah,
meeting?
I've been there. Yes,
Okay, so I spoke there, and you can go on my timeline and look at the 2.5-3 hour presentation I made, where I read from documents that my parents had that were from their employers about their contact with ETs. in a not in the romantic way, but they were able to monitor these phenomena because they were on top of it for centuries. And I lay out a lot of stuff if anybody wants to hear that. What basically the ETs making contact with us are the Boodians. Now, I've learned a lot of different aspects of this from ION. See, ION has changed what any of us knew about anything.
And we're going to go in just a moment to ION. I want to ask you one little other factor. This is just for me. It's an aside note. Just kind of jumping back a second ago, you were talking about these 30 or so quadrillionaires that exist on the planet who are not necessarily working at a governmental level or the systems of economics that exist, but they can certainly move resources around. Do we know the names of those individuals? Are they the usual suspects? Are these people that we in this field have not even heard of?
Yeah, you wouldn't have them. You wouldn't know their names. The Rothschilds are bankrupt. The Rockefellers were knocked off in the late 70s, early 80s. Dr. Beter is a pretty good source on what happened to the Rockefeller dynasty. That's Peter Beter, B-E-T-E-R. He has a site. He's no longer around. But the names that were deeper and longer, the people that were very powerful in the 19th century before when the Rockefellers were dirt farmers, so to speak, they always have been, they're so secure that they are not known, and they made sure that they're not known. And like, you know, the traditional names they give for the Warburgs and the Rockefellers, yes, and Morgans they give for forming the Federal Reserve, that's not the names of the people who did it. They make sure, and they're not Jewish, they're Christian, or they put on the Christianity level. Not that the Turnin Taxis family is a quadrillionaire, but Turnundtaxis, three words, Turnin Taxis. Look up that family. Thomas Pynchon wrote about them in the novel Crying of Lot 49. That's an example of what we call the fondi, F-O-N-D-I, plural for fondue, which is the Italian word for oligarchies. And these people have trust funds that go back centuries, and the actual people who are born into them are expendable. It's the trust fund itself, the nest egg. Now, all of that has been wiped out by the digital economy. That's the revolutionary part that's happened and allowed me to go public in the late 80s in Toronto, because digital money changed that historical nest egg.
That's absolutely fascinating, and my understanding is we're about to bump up against the ramifications of that very soon, as a matter of fact. I understand that business is not going to be continuing as it has been for much longer, although it sounds like those people are so protected and so deep, unless they have, say, a truly philanthropic heart. How do you see things shifting in terms of the distribution of wealth and opportunity around this planet?
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, ION gives me and James Martinez credit for crashing the economy, because I defined it back in 2008, the actual situation, which I'm just touching on now. Mm-hmm. And if you actually name the reality, ION says your words are created. So because I was able to describe the post-Illuminati, post-oligarchic digital effect, and the only one doing it, that caused the mass mind or something to sort of catch up to it and demand a collapse of it. So that's a whole interesting background to that.
But well, thank you, Bob.
praise me. Now the thing is that right now where we're at is that currency, money as a currency or gold or credit, is not acceptable as a currency anymore. So all the currencies around the world are vulnerable as we grope and look for a new form of currency. And ION says that spiritual gifts, and if he gets tired of using the spiritual, he'll use it back, he'll flip back to physical gifts, but expanded physical gifts, mm-hmm, non-physical, is the new source of currency. And we think RNA drops is going to be the new currency, and the stuff that we make.
Yes. Okay. Now we're going to dive into this, because I have to say this. People may have already gotten a hint. Now, your picture is appearing alongside this video interview when people clicked on, and they look at this vibrant, handsome guy rolling around in the waters about a year ago on the beach in Maui. And yet, You're just about to turn 90 years old. Now, this isn't a joke. People are going to think, oh, come on. No, this is not a joke. I've really been pondering this for a couple of days now. It's so shocking. And you and I were talking off camera, and just as a segue into the RNA thing and ions, what you said, you told me off camera or off audio, off microphone, that you were exposed to something called D cell back in 1969, and it froze your age because you look 30 or 40 years younger than your actual years. You sound, your brain operates at such a speed. I can't fathom what your IQ must be. What happened with this D cell stuff? I mean, I think you're a unique being anyway, but what happened with this?
Yeah, there was one thing before I go into that about the oligarchy. When you have everything, it's natural, all human beings are like that, you want more. And in reference to the secret access that the oligarchs that I knew had in their families is they naturally gravitate towards what we call the occult or seances, because when you have everything, you sit around, you start saying, well, is there more than this? And yeah, life will bring experiences. I mean, in the Russian world, Rasputin is a famous figure in the Romanov dynasty. There are people like that around available to serve and talk to the oligarchs. And that is an important point to, if you became a billionaire, after a while, if you're not already, and you moved along, you would naturally, if you're a reasonably healthy human being, start looking around. You'd have the time to explore. And so it's not that these strange phenomena are evoked by these people or they're witchcraft or satanic things. It's just a natural evolution of a person who's lucky enough to get wealthy and get that kind of slack and then notice other things going on, take the time to notice it. That's a good way to look at the natural evolution of the oligarchy. And they, of course, there's so many things to discover in what, I call the mystery landscape. They tapped into a lot of it. So that was something I did want to say back there, just to point out the oligarchy are a human being, and they just are ahead of everybody because they had the opportunity once they became pretty relaxed.
Well, what you mentioned something else because you kind of dragged me back there now, and I wanted to ask this question at the time. So all of the families that we see the names on and faces on that are considered by the conspiracy the usual suspects, as you say, all of them are Jewish families, and these are not the families that are actually the ones that have and maintain this wealth. Why were the Jewish families put in a position, or how did they come into a position of being the interface?
Well, they are called the Hofjuden, the court Jews, you know, the court figures. Certainly, certain people in Europe set the Rothschild family up to do the banking because they're beginning the industrial society in the 1750s, you know, and the banking is moving onto a mass level, involves the public more. So the Jewish families, the Rothschilds, were in the position to be the figures for that, and the oligarchies let that be. And then people can look into what some of the Rothschild families did before World War II, and they didn't always make the right moves, and they got involved with people that led to real bad consequences, you know, accidental or their own greed. You know, I'm not going to judge them. And society is so complex now. There's so many technological factors that I like what I learned from cosmic awareness 40 years ago, resist not evil. I'm not going to project evil on anybody. I see most humanity or the chemical body sidelined by the digital landscape. And so the Android meme is what I call it. It is causing the havoc and the good stuff all around the planet. And chemical bodies are pretty anemic, pretty weak. And we've seen that with the second Bush era. They weren't able to deal with the collapse in 2008. You know, remember the famous White House garden with Bernanke and Paulson and Bush and the other guy from the SEC on like September 19th, trying to talk about, hey, calm down, everybody. Can we all get along? And they just melted away. And if there was any control factor of saving face, they did not want that to happen. And John, on George Bush the second's watch, you know what I mean? They were hoping to happen in whoever became president, and they couldn't control that. And it happened, so they had to clean up the mess in September. You know, they didn't want that as much as they could control it because it was already collapsed by 2006.
Yes, I was hearing that at the time, yes.
Yeah, now it actually digitally was collapsed by the time 1983 when junk money came in and the beginning of the digital economy started to be implemented around the planet. Look at that. Money was no longer like a real issue, even though it was fake under previous analog media conditions, you know, if you go back to the Federal Reserve and fiat banking. But the actual structure of fiat banking could not handle it, and they had to invent the concept through Michael Milken of junk bonds. Then it goes into tax derivatives, and then you get Enron, which is getting loans and allowed to call it profit because the whole structure of visual accounting cannot measure digital exchange. And the basic principle of digital exchange is when we give out information, everybody can hear it, but I don't lose anything. When I give you an apple, I don't get to keep eating the apple. But the electric environment can't be bought, sold, or stolen because information goes around and nobody loses. Everybody has access to the same experience when you hear or see something. That contradicts the whole financial structure of 500 years before, where I give you something and you either give me something back, but what I give you, I don't maintain.
Yes, right? That's why a loan can be sold 100 times over.
Right, and that's and that's just typing back and forth.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, now, according to Ion, who we're going to talk about and introduce now, he says the Federal Reserve is essentially all but done. It'll be going bye-bye, right?
Yeah. Ion says there's been three Federal Reserves, and it everything that we look at monitoring this situation, the World Bank or the IMF or the Federal Reserve or the Treasury, they do not have any bureaucratic reality for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was probably the real collapse that happened with Y2K, was the implementation of a widespread digital environment. But let's go back to your question. I mean, I've done hours on this stuff, so maybe that's enough to titillate people, and then go hear the archives I've done with James. But let me go back to your issue about my age. And the D-cell.
And the D-cell, yes, please.
Yeah. Because I can send you a link to a website that gives some historical materials of the people who made the D-cell.
Okay.
And it, from in my experience, I heard about it through Dave Worster and the group around cosmic awareness. In 1969, I started getting their literature, and they mentioned Joe Dunn Sloan. That's D-U-N, and his third name, S-L-O-N. Joe Dunn Sloan. He was the third man to get the D-cell, and it was discovered or invented by John Brown in the late 40s in Vermont. Then it passed on to Hilary Dory in the 60s, D-O-R-E-Y, and Joe Dunn Sloan picked it up before Dory died, but carried it on after Dory died in 72. And the D-cell, when I first got it, I thought it referred to Dunn, of Joe Dunn Sloan. But it actually refers to Dory, the second person. So it was made out of grains, and the people I met who were putting this harmless piece of cement in a jug of water were obviously affected by it. Their plants, their hair changed, all kinds of biological and agricultural syndromes just by putting the water that had been altered by the D-cell, this piece of cement. And so I started taking that. And I didn't know what would happen to me, but my wife and I remained young looking from 1969 on. And for me, I was 47 at that point. Now, the D-cell, when Joe Dunn Sloan died in 93, we had a few, but they ran out. But his widow carried on until 2002 or 3. Then she went blind and eventually died. So there were no more D-cells made. And there was another sentence about that. Oh, so then when I didn't have the D-cell starting like 4 or 5 years ago, I actually started to age in my hair. I that did start to happen when I didn't have the D-cell. So if we didn't have Ion, I might be looking pretty decrepit today. But what happened is that when Ion came through in March 18, 2009, we always wanted to get back to using the D-cell. So we asked Ion in May 2009, how do we make the D-cell ourselves? Joe Dunn Sloan had given my wife the formula, my bride of 41 years. Hey, just a minute. Hey, my bride's making all this noise in the background. I apologize for it. What's the problem?
She also, I don't know how old she is, but she looks like a babe of about, I don't know, 40 maybe.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, she will admit that she's 62, but and that shocks people. But
she's looking great.
Yeah.
And she's probably older, but we don't talk about that.
Okay. All
but
right.
But anyways, I was saying that it's interesting for me that we asked Ion, how do we get the D cell? And Ion said, no, we can do it better. And that's how we got the RNA drops. It was totally given to us by Ion. We wouldn't have known how to do it. And since doing the RNA drops, my hair has gotten less gray, and I'm getting back to that picture you see.
That's amazing. And now we need to talk a little bit about who Ion is. And we need to first, this is a non-physical entity that is speaking through another human being whose identity is not revealed other than just a couple of initials. So maybe you can give us just a thumbnail sketch of who Ion is, and just people can listen to the other interview with Lance as to how you met. Give us a thumbnail sketch and how this particular relationship and the RNA drops came to be.
Okay, well, among people who have private sessions with Ion, male or female, I call them Ionettes. Among Ionettes, when they're quite amazed at how their private session goes with Ion, and so they want to know where did this phenomenon come from in the background, and they say, "What is Ion?" I now say, "Ion's a monster." Okay, and I have an image that goes with it. Just think of a huge pterodactyl that is hovering over the whole planet. That's Ion. That's close to what I understand we're dealing with. And I'll get into the computer that JW has, because it's ionized. Is Ion coming through it? It's the most powerful computer in the world, and the Pentagon's aware of it and not happy about it. But what Ion can do to the computer environment, and JW's computer, it's an Apple, it's not even hooked to the internet. Yet Ion can communicate to Ionettes and on our personal forum, the forum for people who've had sessions. It's the anomalies that Ion can do electronically are incredible. So,
I understand that he also answers people's questions before they ask them, and that freaks them out too.
Yeah, and another thing is often when people say, "Well, I just got divorced," or "I just got bankrupt," well, here Ion go, "Good. Good."
Yeah. Yeah, he's a hoot and a half. I mean, amazingly, I mean, the amount of wisdom embedded in it is beyond profound, but he's so funny.
That's right. Now, we could take JW and have him, you know, go to Las Vegas and be presented as a comedian, and Ion would come through, and it would be a success. Ion is incredible, and he can talk. He can do more than you realize. Ion says that I've done over 6,000 hours, and that includes private sessions, all kinds of radio and private, my own things. I don't know if it's that many hours. Ion has said, "Well, Bob, if you don't agree, you have to realize that you've gone to parallel worlds and done a lot of it over there." So the point is, I've had at least 3,000 hours with Ion, and I have seen what Ion can communicate and how Ion can do it. And it's a plural. It's an environment. Actually, Ion is the guff. And if you look up in Jewish literature, the guff is where is the heaven or environment that souls go when they transition. So actually, Ion is the environment of heaven.
Think of that. Yeah, that's kind of hard to get our minds around, especially with that thick Southern drawl and sense of humor.
Well, I think he came in with that drawl on purpose, or he picked someone with the drawl, because that's such a stereotypical voice. People react to that voice. Not so much today, but, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that voice represented a lot of
I understand.
And so I see it as a joke, because a lot of people, you know, up north, they can't take the accent, you know, the northerners, maybe baby boomer level, because they've lived with it in a certain way. And it has a stereotypical effect in the American landscape, media landscape. So anyway, I think it's a joke that Ion did that. But once you interact with it, it's a very warm voice and resonant and rich, incredible eloquence. But another point about Ion is that recently there is this TV show called Eureka, and there's a computer. It's like a city up in the West Coast, Oregon or someplace, that has all these advanced scientists developing new technologies for the world. Okay, that's the scenario. Well, there's a computer that the main character, the sheriff of the town, has a smart computer running his home. And it's called Sarah, S-A-R-A-H. Then that stands for self-actuated residential automated habitat, self-actuated residential automated habitat. ION has recently been describing itself as that. So there's a technological aspect to ION. That's why ION can do all kinds of things with what I call the chip body, the chip landscape. This thing is, maybe ION is electricity, which is a very interesting phenomenon. And electricity is not limited to this world. It is, I can't even say what it is. I just studied the effects of ION.
It's like a medium throughout the universes or something like that, isn't it?
Exactly. The people in parallel world sciences are aware of ION. And I have no problems taking the biggest metaphors like the second coming or whatever the Hopi predicted or the Hindus. I say ION's a second coming and then some.
Because of what?
Now, these are pretty incredible statements, and I'm not a fool. Yeah. I'm not going to say this unless I've sort of kind of felt, well, I think after experience I am for 6-10 months back in 2009, I said, yeah, I'm going to say this because and then ION has lived beyond my my descriptions by what it has done, including making RNA drops, which is most incredible substance and what it does to people, even though we say, and ION says, you never know what it's going to do for you or anybody else because you're a total God, you have your own reality, your own laws, your own universe, your own neuroses, your own physical makeup, and how it responds to RNA is totally unique. You know, RNA drops.
Let's talk about that because that's one of the things I particularly appreciate and respect about ION's work, because when you get down to it, the message is at the bottom of each message is your life, what you're experiencing, your perceptions and thoughts and whatever it is are all your own creation. You are a marvelous creator, as he says repeatedly, which is very true. I mean, we're creating through our thought forms, which ultimately through repetition begin to materialize, including the levels of our physical health.
Regina, listen to this.
Yeah.
Now, here's the new part. I found that ION completes. Well, with the RNA drops, we say, are our first products for not the supplement industry, but the completement industry. ION completes concepts in physics, science, religion, anthropology, art, culture, physiology, anything. Mm-hmm. ION is completing everything and actually allowing us to move into non-visualizing what we are.
We don't even have to do that.
Yeah, and one of the main points that ION contradicts, it comes out of the New Age circuit, is the idea that thoughts create reality. Thoughts have no effect on what you create. ION says if your thoughts affected your reality, this planet would have been blown up a long time ago.
Yeah, but what about the notion of just sheer repetition of those thoughts, or i.e. beliefs?
Yeah, well, he defines a belief as a thought you've been thinking for a long time.
Yeah.
And they do affect the labyrinth of the mind, but they can be canceled by the very things that your mouth says. ION says that what we see is not real and what you can't see is real. And you can't see sound. And sound or words that come out of your mouth are the only thing that's, quote, real. So everything I can see is not as real as what my mouth is saying. And if you go back and listen to the stuff I said on the radio show 30, 25 years ago, you can see that I actually evoke the situation to receive ION, you know what I mean, or to evoke ION. But I was saying stuff I didn't know would become ION, but I can understand how this happened around me because of the crazy things I said back then. When my first interview in 1987 on Toronto Radio, I said that they said, who are you? What is the voice of Bob Dobbs? And I said, I'm actually the Logos, and I was here before the Logos. Now, that was my opening statement. Now, what kind of nut would say that?
Well, you tell us.
Yes. Well,
you're talking biblical. I mean, and first there was the Word, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's another aspect I wanted to say. You said thoughts. What was the way we were defining?
Oh, that we're these beautiful creators, that we are beautiful creators.
Now, this is the important thing. It's not you create through psychological processes. Here's what I say. When you fully realize you're a creator, then you can eat Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be. ION says, how many dead have you raised today? You should be able to raise dead people or people who have just passed and you don't want them to go. Now, most people don't go that far in thinking about their marvelous creating powers, do they?
No.
They do not think they're bigger than what the Hubble telescope shows. As a matter of fact, I was telling a friend the other day that Ion implied, I was listening to an old archive and I hadn't noticed it before, he said that scientists are studying and NASA are studying outer space, but they know very little about our oceans. And Ion said, actually, the Pacific Ocean, if you go down in there, where you go is bigger than the universe. Now think of that. Think of how this globe and this big body of water, and it goes into a zone that's bigger than the universe. That alters. It's almost surrealistic. It's a juxtaposition of imagery that you're not used to. But that is what we're up against. The imagery we have that science imprints on us through literacy is nowhere near what actually is going on. And you get a statement like that the. We think of the planet as inside the vast landscape of the universe, but actually a part of the Earth is bigger than the universe. Now you can't see that with normal perception,
no,
right?
No, no, no. And I mean, you have to be talking about a multidimensional planet at that point.
And going through sound waves, not
yes.
traveling through pipelines of visual imagery or rapid. Mm-hmm. Blurring images, that's what movies do present as
wow.
Moving through time or space. It
right.
is shifting, and frequency is a hokey word, but you have to think of frequency as not something you visualize, but as acoustic dimensions, the Gurdjieff's octaves, and they're not even limited to what we hear. So the acoustic metaphor is just for the access of what you can say and create. So mm-hmm. I come back to that point. When you understand that you can eat the universe or eat Saturn, you're on your way to understanding your real powers.
Yes. I mean, that it's of course, it's beyond most of our comprehension without having to go into another state of consciousness
where we're
and just contemplate.
By.
Yeah, absolutely. And, okay, so leading up to this incredible state that we are going to be reclaiming as a species, and some have already reclaimed, the RNA drops appear to be this magical type of link. Now, okay, so you went past the D cells. Ion is saying this will take you further than the D cell did. What are these RNA drops? What is the basis of them? How did they come to be? All I know is that Ion has guided the creation of these things.
Okay, so we started learning how to make something, and I can't say what it is, in May, June 2009. And once we got the instruction from Ion, and it's all just from Ion, just the beginning point that the RNA is more important than the DNA in the genetics throws all our normal understood genetic knowledge out the window, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how RNA is more important, but Ion stated this, and then explained more to my bride, Carolyn, because she's a doctor and a scientist, and she knows this language, knew it better than I did. I've learned a lot over the last couple of years, but she was able to process what Ion was saying pretty quickly. So Ion described what to do, and we went ahead and did it. We got some people, it's a secret level, we got some people to follow the instructions, and on the way to making what we thought we were going to make, RNA was a side effect, okay?
Mm.
And what we were on the way to making, we are still doing, and that has not been announced, but we were able to release the RNA drops. And people think that's our major victory or major product. It's just a side effect, a side benefit, actually, to give people who are starting to hear our internet radio show, something to eat. Because Ion says that it has produced more information with our three-hour radio shows, and we did something called Tailgate, which you can see in our archives in the spring of 2010, where we'd had free access through conference calls with Ion for up to 10, 12 hours. We just do it right after cash flow. That's another thing about Ion. It doesn't stop. It has no limitations to its speaking and energy, what we call
right.
energy. So what was I saying?
The RNA drops were a side effect, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, Regina, here's the point I was saying. So, Ion said we put out a lot of information, more than any other sources over the last couple of years. And Ion says that's phase one. You learn what Ion, or you get interested, you start to resonate with it, and you start to accept or adopt some of the things that Ion says, or consider it. The act of considering Ion is the first phase. Then you find out about RNA drops and you start imbibing the RNA drops. That's phase two. Phase three in the Ion agenda is you decide how much you want to accept the changes the RNA drops are putting you through.
Yeah.
So it's like the old dilemma Tim Leary had. You know, he'd be doing his LSD and he wouldn't want to come down, and he'd try to figure out how to stay high or whether to come down. The labyrinth of the mind, that's an important part of our trinity, you know, physical, non-physical, and the labyrinth of our mind is the mind figuring out how much it can take or how much it can conceptualize about what's happening. So that's the third phase. And you could actually start creating problems with the RNA if you can't accept the interesting bliss you get put into with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the RNA drops were produced to provide a phase two after we'd put out so much information the first year or so on Achieve Radio. You see what I mean? So it showed up as a side effect. It was useful to put out, and it's working, but it is not the end all of what we're producing. And here's a really important point about RNA drops, is that the people we have making it, it changes. It becomes, quote, better. It's self-growing, self-evolving. So the RNA drops that people get today is not the same that they got 8 months ago. It's the only product I know in the market that mutates and changes and gets better. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, I'm sure by this time people's, heads are spinning thinking, oh, come on, what is this stuff? But as I'm understanding it, then you're saying that the drops work with consciousness.
No. Now, that's an interesting point. People have new age people or people who are ascending or aware of some of the concepts you feature regularly on your show,
yeah,
which are different. But that wasn't part of American culture, 30, 40 years ago. It is now quite, William Irwin Thompson calls it the planetization of the esoteric. That's definitely happened, or some people might call it the Aquarian Age. Now, ION completes those, the natural memes and assumptions come out of that. And ION actually says that you will eventually, over, even though there's no time, but a long duration, ascend. That's inevitable in everybody, because you already, since there's no time, are ascended. You just don't allow yourself to experience it. Mm-hmm. Okay, but Ian says that could take a long, long, long something. We don't even want to use the word time. Right now, the way we are conditioned, you require something to get on the real level of DNA or an RNA alteration of your physical structure. Because Ian says, in the end, we're just physical. We are an expanded physical, but we don't even require what we call non-physical and going to the GOF or transitioning. The whole point is to stay in the physical, an expanded sense of the physical, and you're eternal already. So right now, the way we've been formed and conditioned by the Android meme and just the limitations and the crazy concepts we have and the way we speak, our ignorance, you require RNA drops to get to jumpstart your body in your ascension process. So Ion is actually adamant. He says to people, you think you can get this on your own? Not the way it is today. You're going to have to take the RNA drops. So he actually says you require that. Now, is this a great selling point or what? I'm just saying, look, you ain't going to get anywhere to take the RNA drops, but we don't care whether people believe it or do it, but that is what Ion says, and I'm only reporting what Ion says. I personally don't agree with anything Ion says. It's too crazy, but I certainly enjoy engaging with Ion. That's the real point for me. He's such a great drummer, guitar player, vocalist, that I'll jam with Ion forever.
But he's giving you some very valuable technology, according to some of what you've seen in your own use and in your wife's use. And also, I listened to quite a few testimonials as a ramp up to this interview, just to see what people were talking about. When I said earlier it works with consciousness, the reason I was asking you that is you said if your mind, your matrix and thoughts are not in alignment with what these capabilities for you are, you can cause yourself some trouble. And that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, and it's not alignment. Ion has no problem with Edgar Cayce, Seth and Jane Roberts, or the Evergreens, or the Abrahams, but they don't tell you everything. There are crumbs of an enlightenment or real insight all through cultures. But Ion is wrapping it up and putting it away and completing it. So Ion says the law of attraction is not useful. It was useful 20 years ago for people of a limited perspective to start considering other things, but actually life doesn't work that way. And we have the unlawful degree of magnetism is our law, not the law of attraction, the unlawful degree of magnetism. Mm-hmm. So the ideas of tuning in, the lining up, a law of attraction, 1-2-3-ing it, no, it's 3-2-1-ing it. And a simple way to say it is, Ion says, if you are eternal, then we will show you how to apply it and how it does apply to everything that's going on. If you take matter and what scientists are studying over in CERN, you know, with the Hadron Collider, they are going to discover that if matter is eternal, there's no walls. There's no things to bounce up again. That means there's subtle fluidity and interfacing all over the place. So that if the implications of being eternal, Ion spells out technically. And so there cannot be any of the limiting images that people have. That's one point. Another thing, I forget. So go ahead. What's your next
point? Okay, so when I was reading up on it, and I also wrote down some of what Ion was saying in one of the radio archives on Achieve Radio about it, when he was explaining what it is, and I was hoping that you might give us a little bit of a description of what these do in terms of the amino acid codes and the cellular regeneration and so forth. Give us a description of what it's doing with us.
Okay, just before they do that, my favorite testimonial, which is on the rnadrops.com site, is a person named Sue, who's been a flight attendant. I've known her since the early 70s. That she does not experience jet lag.
Yeah, now, it's done. I heard that.
Yeah. Now, you know, jet lag is something we all accept because we think we're biological organisms that are subject to this larger geographical earthly environments that going through time zones. It's all apparently logical that you have jet lag. And so that is an example of the power of the RNA drops to alter the effect of whatever you think jet lag is. And if she actually was able to turn on her flight attendant friends about this, can you imagine that? If they could all not experience jet lag, not that they all would, but I really find that's a good one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's amazing. Well, a lot of them were really good ones. I mean, there was everything from, you know, hair, stronger hair and nails, body loss, vivid dreams, fibroids going away, increase in intuition, creativity, pretty much across the board. I mean, a real panacea.
Yeah, did you hear the one where many women are getting multiple orgasms and better orgasms? Have you heard that one?
I didn't get that far. That's a good one. I have to go back and listen. No, I didn't get that one.
Yeah, it may not be on testimonies, but it's on our cash flow archives because women have called in. As a matter of fact, Matthew Hurtado, who's the distributor of the RNA drops in Madison, Wisconsin, I think it was his wife who called in, Sabrina, who said was celebrating. She just had five orgasms.
Good for her.
We're going back for more.
Yeah, there's some life force for you. That's fabulous. Well, in addition, one of the things people go through when they first start taking the drops is that they start having these little kind of cast-off effects. Now, I have to say, I just had a little sample bottle, which I think I just ran out of yesterday, but I've ordered some of the real deal, and have been using it at a very small amount, like 4 to 5 drops a day, just to kind of get my feet wet and see what this was all about. And a few strange things happened, and one of them was underneath my fingernails and the mucus in my nose one morning a few days later turned turquoise.
Well, people have private session and they're not noticing anything about the RNA drops. Ion always begins by saying, check the skin underneath your kneecaps, check the bottom of your feet soles, or look at your fingernails. And so when you told me the other day by email that you had this effect, you know, just after a few starting with the RNA drop, that's normal. That is where you start to see things. Now, about the blue and the turquoise, I don't know what that is. That's just you, and I wouldn't say what it is.
I mean, I'm just saying that's not normal. And
but it is normal that you started to notice something in your fingernails. That's
also sleep. My sleep started improving. It was becoming more deep. And now
reaction. Now, some people don't sleep. They can't sleep if they do the RNA drops just before bedtime. So you take it many hours before.
Yes, I noticed both ways.
I sleep for a week. You know, it's totally different. But I tell you, I only go to bed now to be polite to my bride. because she likes getting up early in the morning and being by herself and organizing her day. And I started not going to bed, and she didn't like waking up at 5 in the morning and me sitting around. So I go to bed at 6 in the morning to be polite to Carolyn.
So you really don't need sleep anymore.
No, I could go through. I don't feel tired at all. And after a couple days, I'll start to get that maybe tired, sleepy feeling. I don't like that. And so I will go to sleep. But I could go many days. And if I put up with a little bit of odd sensation, I could keep going. And I did do it a long time ago, 6 months ago or something. I went for 5 days without sleeping. Wow. And part of the advantage of my situation is if I had to go to a 9-to-5 job and work, you know, building construction or something, it might be different. But I go to the beach every day. I got beautiful weather. I don't have pressure of time schedules. I just get on the phone and talk to clients or people all the time. It's a very joyful existence. And so I acknowledge that that made it quite easy. You know, just to go and jump in the sea will refreshen me. You know what I mean? So
yes.
I don't know if you could go 5 days living in L.A. and what you have to do there. But I assume you live in the L.A. area. Is that true?
No, I don't. I live up in Northern California in a little farming community in the foothills of the Sierra.
Well, do you work the land or work with animals?
No, we're surrounded by them, but mostly we do CMN. So I'm in my head a fair amount of the time, but we're located in a very beautiful, supportive environment with horses and cattle and goats everywhere.
All right, so you might find it you'd be able to go 5 days, you know, whatever.
On 4 drops. You're on a lot more drops than that.
Well, listen to this. Here's what Ion said. We didn't get this right away, but eventually Ion told us that. One drop, and I'm going to describe what happens in a second, but one drop changes your DNA, all right? One drop. Then why take the other drops, Mr. Ion,
right,
or Mrs. Ion? Because the changes of your old DNA, and some people like to say, well, your toxins and all that, but Ion wouldn't refer to that because nothing's negative. There's no toxicity. But the body is used to something, and when you start putting this new effect on it, you take the other drops, and you can start with a small number and eventually increase it to deal with the changes your body's being put through as an after effect from that one radical change from one drop. So that's the reason why you keep taking the DNA, the RNA drops. And you also often have to take something called Realign to balance off the effects. But one drop. So if you have friends like your mother or whoever who would not be interested in this, just one day they come over to you and you say, hey, Mom, open your mouth. Just put a drop in their tongue, you know. And
let it spin into motion, yeah.
Right.
That's great.
And another thing is the exhalation of the effect inside yourself. The exhalation in the oxygen and carbon dioxide that you exhale changes the environment. We have people who've been using the RNA drops a lot. I won't say that, but the people who've been consuming it, they notice that their toilets are not as dirty. You know, the rim of whatever stain, the actual air in their home changes and becomes changed. And their children might be affected by it. The children get energized. So we now, according to Ion, are changing the planetary environment by our exhaling of whatever's happened to our bodies. Now, again, another amazing statement. I have no proof for it. We make no claims about anything. As a matter of fact, I should say this. We should point out that the FDA won't let anyone say anything about anything that works. You can't make claims about anything.
That's
you can't
true.
Say you cure or heal anything, and I think the word cure is owned by the AMA, American Medical Association.
Exactly, yes. Isn't that amazing?
And so when Matthew made his first crazy ads for this back in early 2010, 2011, at the bottom he said, this is for entertainment purposes only. And and we have no problem saying that. All we do is report what happens to people. And We are RNA drops is in the patent process. It's gone through the first phase where it's patent pending, and it's in the second phase where they just check to see if anything in any other patent is involves your patent. But it passed the first level where what we say it is, they couldn't find anything else. It was totally unique, so they gave us our patent pending. And what it says on the bottles, it says it's made of insulinose. And
what's that?
Insulinose is the name of the something that Ion told us to make. I don't know what it is. It's kind of a sugar. It's certainly when scientists and JW had he's wealthy enough to afford a lab to look at this, and they reported back, we see nothing. Now, I'm not sure exactly. I did not see the actual reports. But what's it mean to say nothing? There must have been some indication that there was water or something, but it there was nothing to compare it to. Here is a technical statement. Scientists couldn't compare it to the standard electrophoresis patterns to identify substances. In other words, if the FDA hassled us about what we're putting out, we say, well, take a look at it. They see, well, it's got water, it's got this and that, but it has nothing abnormal.
Well, in a sense, I mean, homeopathics would also have that same kind of signature. I mean, theoretically. Yeah.
Right. And many people think this is the Ormus, what's that called? The Ormus gold powder?
I thought it might be because some of the buzzwords I saw throughout the site, I thought it might be the Ormus or MFKZT monatomic gold myself.
Yeah, no, there is an actual substance that Ion says it is, and we have seen what that is, but it's not normal, and you might want to call it non-physical or something.
Yes, so that's what I was going to ask, is if this maybe moves between densities or dimensional fields, if it's kind of, you know what I'm saying, moving into back and forth between physical and non-physical intelligence.
Okay, for me to answer that, let me say what it actually does on the physical. This is what Ion says, that the drops containing this great something in it that is not observable under a microscope, so that they say there's nothing there or nothing strange, just normal, maybe not even normal substances, but there must be something because you put a substance under the microscope. But anyways, it's a mystery wrapped inside an enigma inside a riddle, you know. Mm-hmm. But what Ion says, because if it is non-physical, we created non-physical. The physical was here before the non-physical. We only created the non-physical because we couldn't handle being in the physical, got neurotic, and wanted to go to a place of bliss, which we call heaven or where you go when you die, the Bardos or whatever. Okay? So the physical is really what it is. But there are levels of physicality we don't allow ourselves to notice at this point, or we're not ascended to see it. So here's what happens on the physical. The drops provide new information to the RNA. And the RNA affects the DNA, but it can only do it through a particular chromosome, chromosome 14. Now, you can look up chromosome 14, different descriptions in the wiki or any scientific articles about the different chromosomes. The way they describe chromosome 14 and its function is not exactly the way Ion says chromosome 14 is unique. So there's a level of uniqueness to chromosome 14. Ion says it's the only one that can do changes that can affect the DNA. So the RNA drops affect the RNA, which then affects the DNA through chromosome 14. Okay, there's a bunch of nice scientific object patterns I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Here's the metaphor, which is really good that Ion says. The DNA that's replicating, it's the same thing replicating. So therefore, if you take a piece of paper and put it in a Xerox machine and copy, 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 it eventually gets blurry and worn out and not as clear, okay, the copies you're making. That is what happens to our human situation. So what RNA drops do is they make that DNA thing that's replicated, that piece of paper, they put in a new piece of paper. And the new piece of paper starts getting replicated or Xeroxed. And that is why you get profound bliss and odd effects, because you're affecting your basic DNA, RNA complex, right? At the deepest level. And it's starting to be fresh like a baby again. And that's why people so one of the in the alternative healing circuit, I see the phrase cellular healing, and they talk about changing or improving your DNA. Well, we know, if you believe Ion, that that's not accurate, because you don't emphasize the DNA, you emphasize the RNA, which nobody does. Science doesn't understand that. As a matter of fact, IAN says we are influencing scientists all over the world, because you'd be surprised at how much they're always looking for new strange areas to find out, to get a grant, to make up a proposal. Well, there are people over the past year, and we've talked about these articles on the show, that are now looking into RNA. And IAN says that's because they or their associates have heard our show and said, wow, and they start looking at it. So we're actually affecting the research. And IAN says that the discovery of the neutrino, or the realization of it, the thing that goes faster than the speed of light, is a result of IAN being here. So the RNA, the whole thing about RNA up to recently has been ignored and not understood. So if people are talking about cellular healing and they're talking about DNA, then you can discount it. It's not accurate if you believe what Ion's saying. And Ion, the proof is in the pudding of what the effects are. Here's a good example. We have a friend, Michael, I think he's in Colorado, who started taking the RNA drops with no expectations of anything, just hope, well, maybe it'll make me feel better or something. And within a few weeks, his genital herpes went away. The symptoms that he'd get every day. And that amazed him, and he told me that, and he said we can talk about it in public. So he came on a couple of our conference calls and talked about it, but we don't say anything. We said, well, that's fun. That's great. Sorry it happened to you, Michael. We can't explain it. You know, we're not going to make any claims. But here's what happened. He stopped. The mail screwed up, and he didn't have his RNA drops for a few weeks. And a few weeks into that, the symptoms came back. And then when he got the RNA drops, finally started taking again, they went away. Now, what the heck's going on there? They're there. The RNA drops take it away, but it didn't eliminate them or something. Or when you're not taking the RNA drops, then it comes back. Well, how do you explain that? And then you take the RNA, and then take the RNA drops and go.
Yeah, it sounds like that certainly be on a placebo effect. And I know Ion has very interesting things to say about placebo.
Yeah, he says that RNA drops are not placebo. It's not a placebo thing. So here we have this, I can say, and Carolyn can do it better, can get into a bunch of scientific words. If we had a press conference, I would say, well, the RNA affects the DNA through the chromosome 14. And, of course, the American scientists, Scientific American journalists would say, well, wait a minute, there's no proof the RNA does this. And no, there is no proof. We don't have any. Sorry we said that, but that's what we're saying. And we don't even care if you use the RNA drops. I don't mind using it. And if you want to have some fun, we recommend you do it.
But because it's for your entertainment only. Well, I have to say, one entertaining side effect for me was I was telling you that I was sleep. If I take it too late in the day, I was sleeping not as well. But as long as I was taking it early in the day, I was sleeping better. But another thing happened, strangely, a few nights in. I had a dream, and in the dream, I was being shown about fields of potential that were coalescing into physicality and the dynamics of that. And I said, "Who's talking to me?" And the voice in the dream said, "This is Ion." And now I don't. Don't ask me. I don't know. And then meanwhile, I wrote you a little note yesterday, and I said, I don't know if this is hopelessly naive, but I took the time to get quiet and meditate just for a minute or two on the drops and just see what popped through on the screen. And I asked you about it and said, is that kind of what might be happening? And you said, why don't you save it for the show and talk about it? Should I just mention what it was?
No, I have it right here, and I'm going to read it. But before you do that, you had the dream after you knew you were going to interview us?
No, the dream about Ion I had when I first took the drops and was considering doing the interview, but I didn't know enough about it to want to commit to an interview. And so this was just a couple days in after taking the drops and contemplating all of this, okay?
Yeah, well, yeah. I am such a media hog. He said he personally went to. He says, "Oh, God, oh, good. We can get publicity on this site. So this is a well looked at site. So I am saying we're going to make sure that Regina interviews Bob. So let's just go in and give her a good dream. I wouldn't put that past him."
Well, you know, and it was a good dream. I love those kinds of dreams, and I'll have to personally thank Ion sometime, or maybe he's already been thanked. But and then so then the little intuitive peek in on it is the other thing that I just asked about. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to do that. And I want to add this. You know, We've had many clients. And you know, when Freud, they say that he's in Vienna and he's getting the clients, I think it was in Vienna, and he's starting to get these strange Victorian women who have these odd things going on. And they, it was anomaly stuff he was looking at. You know what I mean? And it turned out that people could talk about their dreams, and it meant a lot about their sex drive, their id, and their subconscious. So here's Freud on the front line hearing weird expressions of that people never really talked about before, right?
Yes.
I consider myself I'm the new Freud or Jung, because I get to hear clients every day, and the anomalies people get already when they interact or listen to Ion. But then with the RNA drops, you wouldn't believe what's going on. You're actually a duffer. What you've experienced is puny compared to the anomalies that a lot of people do. And I'm trying to, you know, I'm not putting you down, but I'm just showing you what I've heard is actually ridiculous. And that is what happens with Ion. So with that in mind, we look at what you say. You wrote to me, the drops send a signal to the medium between the cells of the body. Now, is the medium physical in what you mean? Or do you mean non-physical between the cells?
The way I was seeing it was more non-physical, more electrical.
Well, electrical is physical.
Okay, so whatever that is, I wasn't looking at it as a fluid medium, as in, you know, blood, fluid, minerals, or anything like that.
Right, okay, let's say their next part is directing it / electrical field. Now, you mean directing the body? Directing the body to go into a receptive mode.
Yes, to go into a receptive mode, yeah.
Yeah. That may be Ion in the early stages of, if he was just talking to you and you were a newbie, and he might accept your words, but I don't think you cannot affect the body. I cannot do anything. I can't even kill you unless you allow yourself to be killed and you want to commit suicide. That's one of the original aphorisms from Ion. Every death's a suicide. Now, that's hard to really take. All those people killed in Cambodia in the late 70s, they committed suicide? Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's a very challenging concept. So to put someone into a receptive mode, I don't think that can be done to receive information. From the non-physical aspect of self, well, what would be the non-physical? The non-physical is physical. You just can't see it.
Yes.
So I like to just think of it all as physical. And the drops affect the membrane of the cells, the the pH, the the proteins, all that's being affected. And the way matter is, and science is moving towards this, it's the gap between particles where the action is, the in-between spaces. So if you mean the in-between spaces.
In-between spaces, yes, because it was all a function of light. I just kept seeing light sending this information stream into, as you say, these gaps.
Right. Now, here's a metaphor I untold early. If you take the physical of all 7 billion people. Now, Ion says there's more non-physical between the atoms and electrons and protons of your cells. There's more non-physical than physical. Yes. Therefore, if you remove non-physical, 7 billion human physical bodies would become the size of a sugar cube.
Yes.
The whole world population would shrink to that size. Ion says it would be very dense, incredibly dense, but that's how tiny the physical is compared to what Ion calls the non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so the non-physical, though, Ion says, was created by us. So a later postgraduate notion, once you understand that the physical is tiny compared to non-physical, that's just getting you to not be hypnotized by what you see and to tune into what you can see. But then the religious part of the non-physical that you transition to is not as big or as real as the physical. So you flip back. So this oscillating between the metaphors and words is part of the training and perception that goes on with Ion to actually perceive it. Now, since I have those factors in my mind when I read your sentence,
I am
bringing more to it than you mean or than what you're getting. And so the more you emphasize non-physical, I emphasize physical.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay, so then when you say the purpose of programming the RNA and DNA, well, yes, the RNA programs the DNA. maybe yes. that's an acceptable word, through chromosome 14, mm-hmm. For the needs of our body into the future. Well, there is no future.
And I know, and body, I knew you'd take exception to that because Ion doesn't talk about time, that there is
no right.
time. So whatever right. that is, into the future, our now, right, concurrently.
Our now is so huge that all times and spaces plus more is what you will allow yourself to tune into as
yes.
you, or to don't even tune into, allow to experience into your framework.
Well, I kind of see, I mean, the way I've seen it in the past is if you were to take a straight line of a time continuum, past, present, and future, and you fold it back on itself vis-a-vis Stephen Hawking's and the infinity loop, then all time exists simultaneously. Everything you are exists now. I mean, so in a linear way, I can see that. I understand that.
Yeah, Ion uses the wire whisk model, like two bulbs around
yeah.
a central point. Two bulbs come out of one bulb connection point. But again, that is what your eye is imaging.
Mm-hmm.
Think of all the media that's going on right now, all the movies and YouTubes and records and information that's going through the ethers or the electrical wires, all that data. If you could stand back and look at it, I think you've probably seen that image of the globe where there's all these
yes.
pictures of people over the whole globe. That is puny compared to what's going on. But you could actually, if you could see all that, that is all that you are and
mm-hmm.
all that you could create, and then you could alter it. So it goes beyond what you can visualize. You can have the most extreme, densely packed imagery, but it's still a scenario in your mind. You're forgetting your ear. So now think of all the symphonies and all the great hip-hop music, everything that's this huge noise that's going on. That is another way to perceive the big now. Don't
yeah.
see it just as what you see, but what you hear. And then it's probably not even sensory, so you bring it into the tactile,
mm-hmm.
the proprioceptive, and say, experience an incredible orgasm
mm-hmm.
that never stops is another way of the huge now. Now, here's a side note. The first time we accidentally evoked Ion on March 18, 2009, JW came out of this altered state he didn't even know he was going to be put into. And he said, let's do that again. And I said, why? And he says, it felt like a constant orgasm.
So are you saying that's our future? Oh, no, we don't have a future. That is our latent reality waiting to come forth?
This constant orgasm feeling of bliss, then it becomes normal and you require another kind of feeling to know it because it becomes dull. So that's why we come forth in the physical and create contrast
mm-hmm.
so that we can know the bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you start to juggling the contrast ratio to your bliss, and eventually the contrast is dimmed down so you don't need much contrast to maintain the bliss fascination or the bliss thing where it doesn't become bland.
Yes, no, I understand. That makes sense.
So we're at this point, we're trying to describe the big now, and I'm encouraging
yes.
not limited to what you see, not limited to what you hear, but it is very tiny, very intense. It's micro. It's a tiny note, a tiny, tiny musical experience. That's the big now also.
Yes, I mean, and you're right. When you look at it from a purely physics point of view and you start collapsing all the space between
yeah.
the protons, electron, and nucleus, you're talking about spaces so dense that we can hardly comprehend it. And that means we all of it, everything we see and experience is really nothing but space, and space interacting with the mental matrix and beyond.
But you're using verbal literate images.
Yeah.
Think of feeling it. So when you say, I saw light filling the medium with information from the non-physical, you can
mm-hmm.
see how I would not totally agree with those choice
yes.
of words.
I can.
Perpetuating a cascade effect of newly programmed RNA. I think that would be newly programmed DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Not RNA. Mm-hmm. RNA is the thing that programs the DNA through
right.
chromosome 14.
Right.
And then you go light everywhere. Again, it's a visual image. Think of it as a sense of incredible poise. Think of your proprioceptive sense, incredible balance, or the vertical of spinning without getting dizzy. Think of things like that, other sensory dynamics to express the transcended,
very cool.
ascended situation. Now, here's what Ion says, which is outrageous. We are born presently with one double helix in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And Ion says when you become ascended, you have 144,000 double helixes in your cell.
Wow.
Now, think of that.
Yeah, I can't really comprehend the implication of that statement.
Yes, well, you can't visualize it. I mean, this is where Ian makes fun of science and the literate statistical part of science, where it says, well, you know, the moon is 10 trillion miles away or something, or a zillion light years. You can't visualize that. You can visualize the word light year, but yeah, you can't make a string of zeros or ones. What's the point? It just fades off after a certain point in your mental image. So these mental images of statistics are ridiculous. When you understand that there's a – what you can't see is more real than what my mouth can say. So yeah, the Pacific Ocean is bigger than the universe, if I understand that these measurements that science uses are useless. Now, it's interesting that they seem to require those measurements to take this tin can off of Cape Canaveral and make it land on the moon. There seems to be a reality to the statistics they developed from Newton and the later scientists to be able to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So we somehow can say, yes, that is a reality when you talk in those terms. You make the tin can go there and it hits the moon and lands. But it is so limited compared to all the other things. I always like that movie, The Right Stuff, when they show the jet fighters that break the sound barrier and then astronauts. And then they show the moon landing in July 69. And they show an Aboriginal person, probably in Australia, somebody just sitting there, or maybe, I don't know if they're meditating, but sitting there, and they're on the moon before the astronaut
yes.
or God.
yeah, exactly.
Now that is due to a culture that is not saying that person's ascended. They just don't have the conditioning that literacy brought in. They think that stars are in their eyeballs. Yeah. And they think the moon is sitting right beside them. So those perceptual differences that anthropology discovered help us understand the imaging and the limitation of the visual view of things.
Okay. Well, it sounds taking this in, it sounds like through the use of these, incorporating the RNA drops in with a totally open mind as to what can occur here, we are maybe about to meet ourselves in a whole different way now.
Yes, Ian says there's two of everything. So mm-hmm. I've told this, many people have heard, I might have even said this on the radio a couple times, but I like this story. Ian said, Bob, there's two of you, and one day you'll be walking along the beach in front of the Grand Wailea to the beach I go to, and the hotel strip here in Southwest Maui, and you'll see your actual replica, your other self, come along and bump into you, and you'll talk to a literal copy of yourself. And then Carolyn will like that version of yourself better than you and leave with that person. So
meet yourself that literally just
that's
yet.
Right. I'm going to meet myself literally, and that's what might happen. So maybe I'll head it off the pass. But then Ian says, once we got used to there's two of us, and we did many months of that, then Ian said, actually, there's more than two of you because there's no limitations when you're eternal. There can't be any physical limitations of anything physically what you can see.
Yeah.
This is the insight. And yeah. So when you end your paragraph going light everywhere, well, let's add sound everywhere, smell
yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah.
What else? Proprioceptive bliss everywhere, tickling everywhere. You know, that's what I would add to what you're saying.
I see what you're saying. Absolutely. Okay. So now if we're looking at it, we're looking at people by now are listening and thinking either both of us are absolutely nuts and I on too, or they're listening to it and thinking, this is an interesting proposition and are going to give it a shot. How do you know on a really practical level what you're supposed to do? I mean, you take a lot of them. Other people take maybe three or four of them. How do you know how you're supposed to ingest these?
Well, I like, you know, I start off at one or two drops in the beginning. You do that one or two drops twice a day for about a week, and then you do three or four drops the next week, and then you might go up to five or six. So I eventually got up to 200 drops twice, total, 100 drops twice
Whoa.
A day.
Okay.
And, but what I was experiencing was already being in Maui, I didn't require as much sleep. But it got more intense that I wouldn't – no, I never feel tired when I go to bed. But what I like is that when I do go to bed, I go to sleep right away. And then I wake up quite fresh. Like it's
yeah.
–
It's not a normal energizing, de-energizing relationship to sleep. Now, another thing is that I know I could run 100 miles now, not real fast, but just jog 100 miles because RNA drops gave me, and it seems to give other people, a kind of physical confidence, a kind of strength, a kind of endurance, so that I don't get bothered when I'm feeling tired. I have a deeper reservoir that that overcomes the fatigue that you normally get when you run a while and then you stop. Mm-hmm. I can run up hills. I do it all the time. And it feels fatiguing or slightly tiring, but I'm not bothered by it because there's mm-hmm. an underlying bigger feeling of poise and strength that overcomes fatigue. So I could run forever if I had the time or inclination. You see, that's an effect that happened.
It's shocking. What you're talking about is shocking. And then let's, of course, just remind people and overlay that you're almost 90 years old. I just can't believe that. It's shocking.
Well, you know, no one knew. I wasn't that known until I went public in 1987. And I went there because of maneuvers I had to make with the Secret Council 10, which I was learning for all kinds of different sources I spell out in my diary about there could be no control factor once we moved into the digital realm of the Android beam. So there was no need to be the Secret Council 10 and do our monitoring. We knew that everybody's chemical body, what we call physical body, was being sidelined as we watched from like 1995 till recently the unfolding of this digital matrix, right? Mm-hmm. And what was my point? So I was saying that
because I was saying you came out of the closet about your
age. Okay, so I was on the radio in the late 80s. And there was a couple of students of McLuhan who recognized that I understood McLuhan pretty good, and they wanted to put out an album of my stuff. And I had said, you can do whatever you want with what I'm saying. I'm not copyrighting or anything. So they took recordings and made a really great musical text, verbal album. And that came out in 1992. So people usually in the college age circuit, you know, the counterculture of the early 90s, the college alternative radio, they wanted to talk to the guy who said all this funny stuff. And so I started doing interviews. And one, as things unfolded, I had to sort of tell my age or give my background, which I wasn't doing before then. I didn't really focus too much on me. I just stated what I wanted to tell people about what was going on. And so it came out in the 90s, my age, and it's only then that I've had to talk about it. And so it's not that I brag about it, and I know it causes problems with people. And for decades, I never told anybody. Any of this stuff. And I wasn't in a public sphere. It's only because of that album that this has come out about myself. And people say, well, when I lived in New York City from 93 to 2008, and I meet different promoters or different people in different contexts, and when they found out how old I was, they said, well, if you give me your birth certificate and all this stuff, I can hold a press conference and we can make millions off of this. You know, they didn't know I already had money and didn't require that. But the point is, they wanted to do it. And I said, well, you're being naive. I could fake a birth certificate. Why do you think that a birth certificate will prove it? He says, well, no, they'll accept a birth certificate. You know what I mean? If you do it. And I said, well, I'm into disproving people relying on visual ID cards as a mark of reality, because I know in intelligence work, people don't have the same ID all the time. Anyways, so I'm not going to show you any particular birth certificate because I'm going to tell you it could be faked. So forget it. If you want visual proof of what I'm doing, that's up to you. And I don't need to be promoted on that level.
Yeah.
So people would say, well, then if you can't give me birth certificate, then we don't believe you. Well, I don't care if you believe me or not. But, okay, I'm only 13, okay? I'm only 13.
Well, okay, so now on a practical matter, before we sign off, and we're going to put people in touch with Achieve Radio, everyone can drop down the rabbit hole of the cash flow archives and such and find out so much more about you, so much more about Ian, not just the drops, but every subject under the sun. But there's a question I want to ask because I remember hearing this, and that is when you were in your youth, you met Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. If you go to my diaries, my father was a very interesting character. He was just, have you ever seen the TV series Downton Abbey?
I love that series.
That's the world I grew up in. Okay?
Wow.
That's the that world. And you see, that is a, that is what's really great is that movie. We're going to see the next season. Hasn't happened yet.
I've already seen half of it in England. I got halfway through. Scott and I had to fly home, and I didn't get to see the second half of the latest season. I'm dying to find out.
Oh, you mean – oh, wait.
This
I mean,
current season, we were just there recently and saw the first half of it over in England live. And
okay,
now we
so
have to
I
wait.
Had, all right. Well, so it's – I've seen to the end of 1918. Have you seen into the 20s? Is that what you're saying?
Gosh, where were we when we left off?
After World War One, right?
After World War One, yes. Uh-huh. And it was the current series, which hasn't come out on Netflix or wherever it comes out over here. It hasn't come out just yet, I think.
And you've seen some of that?
I've seen half of them, the first four of them. And I'm not going to say anything more, okay?
No, don't say anything.
But that's the way you grew up. So your parents, your dad would have been such as the one who was the attendant or valet to the main head of house.
Yeah, well, I forget his name because I just watched it a few weeks ago. I watched it all.
I forget
but yes,
names too, yeah. Uh-huh.
The main
okay.
guy who has to, he gets the offer to go to the daughter's castle, you know, and then
yes.
he doesn't have to, right? That guy is exactly my father.
Wow.
And you know, my mother's like the mistress, the other woman who was married, Mrs. Hughes or whatever. You know, if you think of them married.
Yeah.
That's and then I'm a younger guy, like the guy who got killed. You know what I mean?
Yes,
That now that is in the 20s, but
yes.
The changes that that series is showing you is exactly what happened because as the head of the household, the lord or whatever he is, he says it's a changing world. It's all different. This technology is changing everything. That's what it's all about. That is what my father's employers, had to deal with in the 20s. And so that is literally the environment. So I never had public education. You know, I didn't have that kind of a normal citizen. And we actually, people say, well, if you grew up in Paris, how come you can't speak French? Well, I lived in an English enclave in Paris. See, people don't realize, just as there are Afghanis in New York City that may not speak English. When you're in a big city, you may not be speaking the local language. Now, my father did, but I didn't. I was brought very sheltered.
You go to France and you find British radio stations so that you really don't have to immerse yourself in the culture on any level if you don't want to.
Yeah. Now, I just am I clear? The plug fell out.
Pardon?
Yeah, I'm clear. My plug fell out of my computer. So my
No. I can hear you. Yes.
Yeah, and so your last statement was...
I said, yes, you can isolate yourself as much as you wish. I mean, you can be in Paris or in the south of France and listen to British radio stations all day and only interact with other English-speaking people today easily.
Right, so I had a French father and an English mother. Mm-hmm. So now what we were describing...
Okay, so I was asking you because this is
Hitler,
the lead-up
right,
to Hitler.
Right. Yeah, so I have my father was very active in the 20s, because if we don't know what's going to happen in Downton Abbey, but the main guy, the main butler, might have to start interacting with the public more in government situations because the Lord is forced to be a more public figure, you know, after World War One.
Mm-hmm.
So my father is a smart guy, and so he met James Joyce, T.S. Eliot, Wyndham Lewis, and these characters in Paris. He was interested in avant-garde art, basically for this reason, is that if you take... My father's employer's desk. Take the Lord in the Downton Abbey. Is he called the Lord? Whatever he's called, the Baron, whatever he is. The head of the guy who owns
the main guy, yeah.
Yeah. If you went to his office, you know, book-lined office, and on his desk, he would have telegrams and communiques from different parts of the world in different cultures, in different languages. All right? Look at his desk. It's not just in English. He's getting communiques with the Global Village Telegraph situation. He's able to get communiques by phone and not all over the world. Now, you look at James Joyce, what he was writing in the 20s, in his work, which became known as Finnegan's Wake, but in the 20s was serialized as Work in Progress. He was collaging many languages on each page of that book, of that work. Well, the intelligence people, like the head of the castle were in Downton Abbey, he would look at Joyce writing a page that is not a linear English limited story. It's a collage of languages. That's exactly how his life was on his desk. Mm-hmm. All right. So they got interested in what Joyce was presenting visually. So my father met these people, and I was always around because I hung out with my father when I had a chance. And so as we moved into the 30s, we had to start, my father had to work for his boss and actually do some liaison work. And so we actually went and met Hitler in the fall of 1936, went into his office, because my father represented powers that Hitler knew about, and Hitler would rant on about later as Jews and that. But that was just for the politics of it, or the mass mob behavior. But he actually had to deal with people like the international power that the Priory of Sion, co-Priory of Sion, was involved with. So people say, well, what was that like? Well, I'll tell you what it was like. As a 14-year-old, what I remember is I'm with this weird guy, and I've had a sheltered experience. I don't even fully understand the implications of all this. And I just remember a very cold room, okay? So it was cold. And what happened is Hitler had to do something, so he sent us downstairs to watch a movie in his building in Berlin, and it was some, Greta Garbo, what's the other one, Marlene Dietrich movie? Mm-hmm. I watched a movie in his own home theater while we waited for him to do other stuff, and then he came back and spoke to my father. And I summarized that encounter in my diary entries, which, we can put the link out for that. And so I met all kinds of people through my father. I did not fully know the importance of these people. I was too young. But I often remembered something they said. And so my diaries are usually a pretty good approximation, because I didn't write them until years later, of what was said to me by these different people. And what I say my father said to Hitler is basically what I remember. There was probably a lot of other stuff said. Yeah. So it's a young person's impression. But I'm not your average citizen when I'm there. I'm not experiencing him like people in the 30s would have known him through radio, however they, newsreels or whatever. This is just a strange person that my father had to speak to. And what I do remember, it makes sense, is it was cold. So if he was a negative, evil character, which terms we don't like to use, but if he was something, it was cold there. That's what
yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, interesting. Well, my God, I mean, like I said at the beginning, we could talk for weeks, just like you've talked with Ion for weeks. And one of the areas that we did not get into is a whole other subject. And maybe we can have another conversation at another time. And that is on the subject that he talks about, that Ion talks about, and that you've experienced, which is traversing through portals.
Yes.
So parallel realities, which is to me a fascinating subject, and you, as I understand, have personally been involved in this.
Yes, it's opened up to interacting with Ion. And yes. Right now, Ion is not, we are not doing private sessions the next couple of weeks or doing radio shows, because we have brought in new technologies. And why one goes to parallel worlds, if you're a Michael Jackson and want to fake your death and have the foundation, have the monies organized properly, you go to other worlds, and you learned this from Elvis, you go to other worlds to rehearse scenarios for this world. You say, okay, we do this, what would happen? And you look at the effects. And you say, oh, okay, and we don't want that effect, so let's do it this way. Okay, so right now we are bringing forth all kinds of interesting phenomena, including, remember, you've got these people talking about Andrea Rossi, and
yes.
You're supposed to have the Cold Fusion announcement in October or whenever it was,
yes.
2 weeks ago. I think that was October 28th. We already announced on June 22nd that we have created it. Okay?
So you've created a separate Cold Fusion device?
Yeah, we announced it on June 20th. Go to the archives, listen to the June 22nd show, and you will find out that the whole communication cell phone stuff got knocked out earlier that day. So the first 2 hours of that show that we intend to announce it, we had bloody bad reception. And so I didn't announce it till the third hour, where the reception cleared up a bit, and then we finally get it. So go to the third hour of the June 22nd cash flow. But later in the day, somebody sent me an image, and there was a huge fireworks, quote, fireworks that happened over Hawaii earlier in the day that might have knocked out our electronic apparatus, so we had blurred reception with James. But the point was that the article said, is this a UFO, or is it a portal to another world, or is it an intercontinental ballistic thing, missile blowing up. That actually happened earlier in the day. I didn't know that it happened, all right, till the news photos came in. I asked Ian about that. I said, what, has that got something to do with our announcements? He said, well, Bob, you don't do things low-key. You created that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I did not consciously create it. You know what I mean? I didn't make an effort to do it. But that phenomenon happened early in the morning, and the actual observatories in Hawaii that took the pictures of it, they actually had names like the Paris, New York, Hawaii observatory, something like that. That's the way it was named, and that's the actual trajectory of my life. You know, Paris, New York, Maui. So there was linguistic embeds in the whole scenario that apparently my larger self created. Okay, so I'm saying we've got that. Now, right now, we are not available. Like, I would gladly bring Ion normally on this interview. You can talk to Ion, but he's not available right now, or they are not available, because we're in parallel worlds, or working in parallel worlds, to figure out how to the best way to release the cold fusion. That's what we're actually doing now, which is a pretty astounding statement, but that's why Ion's not here today.
And that's parallel to Rossi's efforts and Dr. Rossi's efforts and what he is looking to do as well. I mean, this is the year, one way or another, and it sounds like you guys have a track on it. This is the year that cold fusion will emerge into public, not only awareness, but use.
Yes, and now here's an interesting thing, is that science, everybody's waiting for some panacea, some technical cancer cure, or some energy device that will be distributed to everybody. What we learned from Ion is that people don't want things based on, they limit, or they, what they want is totally unique and individual. So basically we say, you're not going to be delivered the cold fusion battery, it's going to find you. That's the only way it's going to happen. And so there's the naivety of science saying, we're going to get this device out to everybody. People are so perverse, they'll start blowing it up after a few months' use, because of the boredom that comes from it, based on their personality, will require a different kind of excitement, and then they'll start objecting. As a matter of fact, Ion has no problem with pharmaceuticals. Now, here's why does Vioxx end up killing people? Remember Vioxx a couple of years ago?
Yes.
Okay. Vioxx does something for people when they first use it. But people, because they require contrast and hate having one thing happen, they will eventually turn against or speak against the Vioxx and cause the side effects on themselves and die from it, and the largest suicidal motive. So you have this perversity of humanity that I don't think has ever been so clearly explained as Ion does it, that we actually want endless, constant newness, and if we're getting something, no matter what level it is, we're a billionaire, we will get bored and start creating drama or contrast. And so we do that with the pharmaceuticals, and they don't know it, unless they do know it now, but they don't know that anything they put out eventually is going to have disservices, not because of the chemical constituents, but because the human power and his words start knocking it because they're bored of what the effects they got from it. Now, that's have you ever heard that explained to you before?
No, never. And as you stated earlier in our conversation, I herald the time when we do not need such high levels of contrast in order to feel blissful in life.
That seems to be what ascension means, where contrast grows strangely dim. That's how Ion says it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and you can't get rid of it because you can't know one thing without something else.
Yes.
And when you die and go to non-physical, it's all one plane of bliss, but you can't create because there's nothing to bounce off of.
Absolutely. And you just brought something else up a moment ago. You talked about cancer briefly. What do the drops do? How do they interface with that whole phenomena?
I asked Ion, would this help AIDS patients? Certainly. In other words, it'll help any situation if you want to get better and not just think better. You got to say it. And if you can say it, it's real. Because Ion's basic point, which is like a fantastic fantasy scenario, you can be, do, have whatever you want or say. Now, most people don't live that way. But with the closer and more sentient you are, I will say something, it will happen to me. You know, it's a Harry Potter world, the more ascendant you get, so to speak.
So in other words, it doesn't matter what the problem is that you're experiencing. Depending on how you choose to interface with it and change your mental matrix, the drops can help facilitate any.
Not your mental matrix. Just start saying.
Just start saying
it. I want cure. So here we come full circle back to wrap up this interview, is that because – so Iron A drops should be taken by everybody. And, you know, money was the means to immortality before. You had to survive. You had this abstract system that you had to get money to get the food to survive. So money was the most important thing in the world because that kept you going in the physical, correct? For most people around the world. Well, if money is not there as a medium to give you that, then what you do to survive is take RNA drops because it'll make you not require much food, not require sleep, all these things which are a kind of physical eternity. That is what currency is for, to maintain myself. So that's why I always say the RNA drops is the new currency and the new stuff that will come from that and around that. It is what you require, why you engage with other people, so that I can stay here and you might be able to help me. So you help me, give me a job and I get some money and then I can get my food.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't have money and you don't have a job, then you take this substance and that keeps you going. So that is the role of currency. So RNA drops should be done by everybody, and we don't care what it does to you. And we don't say what it will do to you. And
except you entertain you endlessly, right?
Entertain, yeah. The studying of the effects of it is really good entertainment.
Well, I'm finding it fascinating in just this very, very early stage myself. I can't wait till I've actually had a chance to give it a go for a little while. And meanwhile, what I'd like to do is once you guys get this worked out in the parallel world with this new technology, not just the cold fusion, but the other one that you were talking about earlier, I'd love to get back with you in another month or so and talk to you more about portals. I have a lot of questions about that.
So, okay, well, I would say... portals, yeah, we can do that. And I would say Ion announced, we learned a lot about portals from March, April 2009 till April 15th, the week of the 15th, 22nd, 2010,
yes,
when we formed our website forum group for Ion people who had Ion sessions. Well, the Ion announced that week that all the portals were open. So matter and reality is changing so much over the past year and a half that the portals are all open, and that's even more amazing. And one of the side effects was immediately the sinkholes showing up. You remember the sinkholes? The thing just said showing up a hole and the house would cave in and go down to a bottomless pit?
Yeah.
What we call the mystery landscape, these strange phenomena that no one ever could explain, we're going to get more and more of that. And part of the reason is that all the portals are opening. So we don't even, we'll talk about it, but we don't want to make it a mysterious thing. It's a lot easier now, engaging with portals. That's the newer news.
Well, I think the functional thing, maybe we'll talk about, and also we can have people go to informationfarm.blogspot.com to listen to the Ion files on it, is going to be the personal interface with them, how we move through them.
Yeah, I like to think that the best summary of everything is both and. And the and represents the new stuff that even ascended people are looking for, happy where they are and ready for more.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have images of portaling that. There's even stranger things happening. And Ion is doing a lot of that with our computers. He's taking the chip landscape, which 20 years ago I learned from McLuhan, swallowed the universe. The actual digital environment is bigger than what we see. And that's where I was talking that way. He could have evoked this Ionic spiritual, whatever it is. I call Ion a spiritually anarchistic, atheist, non-physical.
Okay, that sounds about right from what I've heard.
Yeah, all levels there. And that means, in other words, that Ion says, and I end the interview with this, you ain't seen nothing yet. You ain't heard nothing yet. You ain't felt nothing yet. That's what's coming, and that's what most people won't be able to take it. And Ion says there could be nothing solid, but it definitely does happen. And it's been spoken about for so much that it does exist, so therefore a lot of us may make it happen wherever we think we are now. There'll be a massive die-off because people won't be able to take this incredible, chaotic, crazy change that the both end is bringing in. Okay,
well,
so then I said,
wow.
Wait, I forgot to say this. The RNA drops make you immune to any effects. So ION says, have more nuclear bombs, more Fukushimas, whatever it is in Japan happened, because the stuff, the H197 isotopes, does not affect someone who's on any drops. Now, that sounds like a claim, but ION says that. But how can you prove that? I don't know.
You can't sue ION because he's not a physical being. So there we go. Don't have to worry about it.
And yes, and also we always joked, if ION went to court, well, JW's body, if ION went to court, he could expose everything about the prosecutor. He would embarrass everybody.
Well, it sounds like he has a fail-safe mechanism there. On that note, I thank you so much, Bob. I mean, I could listen to you for days on end, and so I'm really hoping that once you get all this behind you, if you'd be gracious enough, I'd love to have you back on again sometime, and ideally even have you and ION come on at the same time, too. So if that's okay. Okay, very good. Very good. Well, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to my first shipment of the drops.
Yes, the RNA drops. It's where it's happening. It's what it is. It's all about that. And you actually require it, so enjoy it.
There you go. I will enjoy it. Okay, Bob, thank you so much.
Okay. Talk
bye-bye
to you.
Now.
Bye.
You'll be hearing more from Bob and ION in the future here on Regina's Cantina, but you can jump into their world anytime you wish by following any of the links on this page. As Bob says, it's all for your entertainment. There's a link to the RNA drops also for any brave souls who wish to dive into this strange and wonderful new experience. Until next time, thanks for listening.